Hello and welcome back to the Villa Filler podcast. I'm here as always with my good friend Dan Wiseman. Dan, don't think we need to intro the score. We kind of know this, as if the score wasn't bad enough. You know, Boubacar Kamara, mate, ACL injury. That's his season done. That's our season done, really, isn't it?
Hey, you know, like when I edit these shorts for TikTok and everything like that, good chance to plug that early as well. There's a link in the description. If you go down there, there's links to our Instagram, TikTok, and everything else where we put up a bunch of stuff from the podcast. Usually I'll edit the clips, a bit of music in the background to keep them like light and entertaining. And this Marvin's room and all of the clips come to this podcast. These are sad boy hours. These really are. Pour one out for everybody you know. If you're a Villa fan, pour one out for all the other Villa fans you know. If you're not a Villa fan and you know any other Villa fans, pour one out regardless. We are struggling over here. These are sad, sad times. It's not without its positives. You know, we got the confirmation that Leon Bailey signed his new deal today. Congrats, Leon. I'm very happy to have you stay with the park for another few years. But the Villa admin, he likes to do this. Bad news to drop. There's always good news before. I feel like we've done this quite a few times, is that, yeah, we make sure that there's a sandwich of positivity so that, you know, you're not in a total pit of despair. We did get Leon's new deal, but we've already covered that on the pod. We already knew that because the story got leaked a couple of weeks ago. There's an episode on that if you want to go and check it out. There's some shorts on that too. So, yeah, I mean, the result yesterday is not doom gloom. Thought it was a decent performance, but yeah, when we got that boomer news, considering we're still waiting on Esri's like official report to come back, it's uncomfortable times, mate.
That's the thing, mate, isn't it? That's now the third ACL injury this season that we've had to contest with, and that, as you say, mate, is without knowing the status of Esri's as well. People are sort of suggesting that that's an ACL injury, and it's just, it's hard to take, man. You know, we've lost some really important players, but you were right, mate. There were positives to take from yesterday. I generally thought that we battered them. I feel like we deserved a lot more than we got out of that game. And I'm sure the comment section is going to be full of Manchester United fans. So, hello, for one. And, you know, many reasons why this game is frustrating, mate. First of all, the ball just doesn't go out for the first goal, mate. It's not a corner. And that's frustrating. But I think what's worse is just how poorly we defended that set piece as well. Mm. That seems to be a bit of a weakness that's sort of creeping in recent weeks, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, it's really frustrating when you kind of go behind like that because, you know, we spoke a lot in the preview about the amount of attacking threat that Man United have. Obviously, Højlund's goal was his fifth goal in five straight games, I believe. So, you know, they were in really good form. Garnacho, Rashford, Højlund have all picked it up definitely since the new year. And you're always aware of each one of those three players is capable of real brilliance. You know, you've seen Marcus Rashford's goal catalogue speak for itself. You've then got, you know, even Garnacho, the goal he scored at Goodison Park earlier away this season. You know that worst case, as has happened plenty of times in the past down at Villa Park, you can defend really, really well for 90 minutes. And then all of a sudden, there's just a moment of individual brilliance. Someone spanks one in from 25 yards or something like that. And you go on to lose the game. But when you're giving them goals like that, you just set yourselves up with a mountain to climb. And yeah, I think it's absolutely unfortunate it's not a corner in the first place. But yeah, I think the bigger talking point is that we really didn't defend it very well. But, you know, we did respond to it. And it's just a shame we weren't kind of clinical enough. I mean, I think Unai said in his post-match that he thought it was the second best performance of the season after the Manchester City game. And I honestly don't think he's far wrong with that. I really don't. I think we created so many chances and it was just not Ollie's greatest day at the office. I think if we get a slightly better version of Ollie Watkins on the day, then we win that game almost comfortably. So, but yeah, you do make it so much harder for yourselves when you concede goals, particularly from set pieces and annoying ones like that when there's a knockdown. You know, you've got two balls to win there. The first header, which I think Maguire sends back into the area, we missed the opportunity to win that. And then no one's even near Højlund when he kind of stabs it into the net. And yeah, it is, you do just make the task so much harder from there.
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest sort of positive that I can take from this game is, and also, you know, probably you could take a negative from it as well, was Jacob Ramsey. I thought he was excellent, but obviously just he didn't come with his finishing boots either. I thought he had a couple of really good opportunities, underhit a few passes in the final third, but was generally getting in positions that allowed us to create chances and cause trouble for Manchester United. I think it's fair to say they expected Yuri Tillemans starting on that left-hand side, and I think Diego Dallo and Harry Maguire were pleasantly surprised, I think we could say, when they saw they had sort of had JJ running at them. I think it's really encouraging, to be honest. You know, we've said for a while we missed that directness that JJ brings, and I'm confident that with three or four more games under his belt, JJ gets at least one goal from a lot of the chances that he took yesterday. So, you know, there's a positive in that. And I thought Dougie was fantastic as well, mate, to be honest. And now you've got Rio Ferdinand sort of taking the piss on the timeline, but that comes with the territory, doesn't it, mate? That comes with the territory when you're dealing with this lot. Dougie involved in the goals, mate. You benched him on FPL this week, didn't you? Or did you transfer him out? He's just not in your team, is he?
He's not in my team. I had... Feel free to... Hold a second, how many bench points I have.
I mean, your bench like is insane. And mine is as well. I mean, I benched Saka this week. So I backed Watkins over Saka.
I had 19 points out of Gabriel and Archer, both on the bench.
That's heavy. And no Dougie. And you had Dougie in your team for the longest time.
I did. I took him out for Kudus, who I thought was going to come back from AFCON. And I'm not even going to go into how that's gone.
Yeah, just to compound the misery even more, mate. Just to compound that misery even more.
When it rains.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. But, you know, shout out to all the guys who have Dougie in their fantasy team, because I know he's a bit of a underrated pick. Open play goal as well from Dougie. I just feel like there's like flashes of brilliance just sprinkled throughout 90 minutes you see from Douglas Luiz. Just simple things like body feints and just the way he carries the ball, the confidence that he exudes. You know, he's jumping up, he's beating Casemiro to headers. He's phenomenal. And I think if there's any sort of silver lining, you know, if we really are looking for one with this sort of Kamara injury, is Dougie's been fantastic. And will he probably have to move a little bit further back to, you know, accommodate for this injury? Yes. But with the vein of form he's in right now, I'm sure you could play him at right back and he'd be doing a shift for us, mate. So I guess if we're trying to find a positive, it's Dougie Luiz at the moment, isn't it?
It always is. In good times and bad, Dougie Luiz is always a highlight for us. I've been on record previously saying that I think he's our best player. I'd probably go one further than that. I think he's our best player by far. I think technically what he's able to do, we have become so accustomed to the job that he's kind of able to do all over the park now, setting the tone and the way that it changes now. I mean, if Villa have a good game, his fingerprints are all over it. All over it. I have not come away from a game, definitely this season, probably stretching back into probably when Unai took over, to be honest with you, where I've come away from a game thinking, Dougie Luiz was really off it today. And for virtually every other player in the starting 11, there have probably been, not many, but at least one or two for some of the most standout performances where I thought, not quite at the races, but Dougie has just been, and is just perennially excellent. His goal output, it was probably the final piece in the puzzle. And now that he's kind of added that to his game, I mean, the first three seasons at Villa, he got 5 goals. He went the entire of the 2020-2021 season without scoring, 3 in his first season. In 21-22, got 2 goals. In the last 2 seasons, he's got 13 goals, 6 last season, and then 7 up to this point. And the way that he's getting goals, if you can have a player like Douglas Luiz getting into double figures for goals, then that really is, okay, if he's going, we're all going. If he's getting double digits for goal contributions, everybody can. There's really no kind of limit to that, because it's really not within Douglas Luiz's wheelhouse. But we've also seen McGinn's output increasing. It's something that's happening across the team. But to see Douglas Luiz doing that, we are so fortunate, because he's just taken step after step and just continues to evolve. And I don't know where the ceiling is right now for Douglas Luiz. I don't know what the next part of his game is that you just kind of hand him to improve on. But if he can keep scoring at this kind of clip, then he's just a wonderful get out of jail free card. You know that when the chips are down, when Ollie's misfiring, when it's not quite falling the right way for JJ, as you said, if you've got someone like Douglas Luiz, particularly in home games, feels like he always comes away with a goal contribution. It's just such a wonderful thing to have because you can almost rely on him scoring at this point. And I just think that's incredible.
Yeah, you need that, mate. You need guys like that who can step up. And, you know, it's hard to imagine us without him. As you say, mate, he's just a stalwart for the team and he's absolutely fantastic. And I love the celebration. I don't care what anyone said. I thought that was brilliant. And Onana don't half give it. Like, he's always giving it to fans. And I think he's probably the last goalkeeper in the league who can sort of be trying to wind fans up and all that. So fair play to Dougie for dancing on him like that, enjoying. I think it's Carnival next week, isn't it? So I think that's why he was sort of dancing like that in his reply to Rio Ferdinand as well. I think the turning point for this game, mate, and I know, you know, people are going to go, you know, Captain Hindsight, this and that. Said this to my dad at the time, and he said the same thing. Scott McTominay always scores goals. He just does. There's a really, really good video that James Alcott did on his channel a couple months back, sort of profiling McTominay, you know, sort of explaining his past. Because I didn't realise this. He was a striker at Manchester United in the academy. And it was Mourinho who came in and sort of turned him into a bit of a holding midfielder, which I think it's fair to say is not his strong suit when you see how lethal this man is inside the 18-yard box. And, you know, it does sound weird to say that I had this sinking feeling when Scott McTominay was sort of standing on the sidelines ready to come on, but I just had a feeling. I just had a feeling that he'd get a goal. And it was clear, United's plan. The players knew exactly what they needed to do. They needed to get the ball out wide. They needed to put the ball in the box and find McTominay. And I feel like that's how a lot of teams have actually been getting at us recently. Not necessarily playing those crosses as United did to the back post onto McTominay. And obviously, he's sort of on Matty Cash there. Really smart from him to choose to stay on Cash rather than either of Longley or Carlos. But, you know, we've kind of seen this in recent weeks, haven't we, mate, with Newcastle, with Chelsea, just how quickly teams have been getting the ball out wide and then coming back in. And it's killed us. And again, this was kind of different to that, as I said, but it's a great goal. It's a really well-worked goal from them, to be fair. But it's crap, isn't it, mate? It's absolutely crap because, I mean, the thing is as well, where McTominay sort of, he's neither a forward nor a midfielder. So nobody really knows who's picking him up, whose man he is. And that's how he obviously ends up with Cashy, doesn't he? And he's this sort of elusive figure that if the ball falls to him in the box, like, there is a really high chance he's going to hit the back of the net. And I can already see some of the comments as well from Villa fans. I don't particularly rate McTominay as a footballer either myself, but the kid knows how to finish. And, you know, it was the only roll of the dice that Erik ten Hag had really at that time, wasn't it, mate? And sort of bailed them out with 5 minutes to go.
Mate, there's an incredible stat, to be fair to him. He's won more points for Manchester United with his goals than any other player in the Premier League can have points sort of attributed to them, if that makes sense. So he's single-handedly won United 12 points this season. That's incredible, isn't it? Like, four wins that you can basically in on one player coming off the bench and saving the day. The next is Hyungsung Min with 10 and then Dom Solanke with 9. But I think McTominay kind of really stands out there because of the role that he's playing in the squad with Son and Solanke. They are both respectively probably the main men in their team, and that is far from the case with McTominay. I actually really like Scott McTominay. There's a really I saw an interview before the game actually where he was kind of talking about Steve Clarke and how important he's been for the Scotland setup, and it's kind of my first thought after he scored that, you know, John McGinn is going to know all about Scott McTominay's goal scoring prowess because he's kind of taken John McGinn's role in the Scottish national team of this amazing goal scoring midfielder. He's been an absolute fire. And so it's just a killer though, mate. It's just a killer. And so it's a really good goal, but we allowed it to happen. And I think that's what's frustrating. And I think that might be a good segue into the narrative that's kind of come out of the last few games, mate, where I don't really feel like Unai has played his cards right. I think, I know hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I think we all thought maybe the substitution for Tielemans felt a little bit odd. Bailey was definitely our most threatening player on the pitch. And it just quite, it never felt that, like, once we got the goal, that we pressed really for a second one, that the intensity really dialed up. I'm not really sure what the approach was from that. And to give Unai some credit, I don't really feel like that came from him, because he was cutting a very frustrated figure on the bench. And, you know, he was clearly, but visibly, very aggravated by the fact that Villa weren't pressing for that second goal, perhaps at the rate which we've all liked. But the problem is that chances that we were missing, you know that United won't do that. You know that United won't miss as many chances as you will. We've seen it so many times. We saw it on Boxing Day less than 2 months ago, that if you keep giving United opportunities to go and win the game, then they will. You just have to take the chances when they arrive. And I know it's so cliche, and it feels like such a basic thing to kind of pull the game back to and whittle it down and say that, but it is so true. When you're playing these top teams, if you don't stick them away in the first half, as we had the chance to do, then they will have players like this. You know, United have always had players that can come on and do this off the bench. If it wasn't Scott McTominay, it's Marouane Fellaini. If it's not Marouane Fellaini, it's someone like Chicharito Hernandez. Going back off the years, they've always had someone with the capacity to do this in games. And that sense of inevitability just was drawing and drawing closer to me. And whether it's Unai or the players or a combination of the two that's at fault, why it didn't feel like Villa really went for the kill, as I think we could have done. I think we easily could have won that game.
Yeah.
But it felt like all of our good work came before we scored, and the crescendo was the equaliser.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think, you know, there has certainly been a lot of talk about that Bailey substitution. I honestly thought he was just really tired. I have to, you know, agree. I share the exact same sentiment, mate. You know, everything good that was happening came from Leon Bailey, and it, you know, maybe he wasn't tired. Maybe it was. I think Unai did come out afterwards and say he was a little bit tired. But I guess we have to take his word for it as well, really. But yeah, it felt like a weird one at the time. And it's like, you know, when you sort of, the momentum, as you say, is slowly sliding away. Like that second half with Lindelof at left back, you just got to keep going, man. And I think just, you know, with the sort of headspace it feels like Moose is at, where he seems to be lacking a bit on confidence, isn't as physical, seems to second guess, takes half a second too long on the ball. That just gave Lindelof that bit of confidence that he needed, really. Because mm-hmm. Bailey wasn't letting up at all. Bailey was fantastic. It was a joy to watch, as per. And again, it's just a shame it wasn't really happening for Moussa. He has a really good chance on the counter-attack as well, mate. Kind of flips as he's taking the shot, doesn't he? You know, on another day he scores that, and we're talking about Moussa being back and everything. But I mean, we had all these efforts on goal, but we were just, they were all literally straight at Onana. And like, I know he's not a very good goalkeeper, but we do have to try a little bit harder than just aiming at him for the, you know, in terms of trying to get the better of him. I think we gave Onana a little bit of confidence that he probably needed as well with some of that. I don't want to say it's one of those, because it didn't feel like just one of those, mate. I don't know if it's the injuries, and obviously, you know, you're missing Ezri, and that sort of compounded the sort of misery that we're sort of feeling right now on this podcast. But we've got a run of games now where it's vital that we pick up points, mate, isn't it? It's absolutely vital. You know, next up, we've got an away trip to Fulham, then we're back at home for Nottingham Forest, and then we're on the road again to Luton Town. And somewhere after that point, we will have two European games sandwiched between games against Tottenham. I think we play Man City away eventually as well. I think that's the start of April. So, you know, we've got some difficult games coming up, and as we've kind of said in recent weeks, mate, it feels like we're sort of stagnating a bit. So it's going to be important that we put all of this aside, you know, really quickly. And again, you know, largely, like, the performance was good. It's just, it's about finding that cutting edge that we, you know, only had temporarily in one game against the worst team in the league in Sheffield United. It's just finding that again, isn't it?
If the odd thing is, and I remember such a pessimist, I actually have food. I think still really that all from the day. It's and very, you know, like that was the goal that just kind of written that Lee just burst the balloon. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's such a killer. It was so hard to take. It felt like such a kick in the stomach. But I missed that Fulham game, even despite the injuries, with quite a bit of optimism. I just think that we've kind of, you know, we showed enough in that game to make me think that we need to kind of create a real us against the world mentality now. It just feels like all of the chips are against us, and we can kind of go look at that two ways, and we can deal with that two ways, and we can kind of shy away from it and put our hands up and say, hey, we had a good run, but we've got no chance. Or you can kind of really batten down the hatches and make a real good go of it. And I know that we're missing some key personnel, but we're also getting key personnel back. You know, Luke and Dean came on yesterday. Paulo Torres is not far away. And so I know it's kind of one in, one out, given that we've now lost Kamara and Konza, but it's not, it'd be really interesting to see kind of how we line up. I think, as you rightly say, I think JJ's looking better than ever. I think Leon Bailey, now, obviously, I know he probably put pen to paper a little while ago, but now that he's done that, he's shown that we can really rely on him to create chances. I think there's enough going forward to make me think that we can still be okay. It's just the European football is the one thing that now we really have to kind of weigh up our priorities and go, okay, do we go all in on the Conference League now? Because the one thing that we definitely can't do with the squad is manage two competitions probably as well as we'd like. And so we probably got to pick a side there and go at which competition represents our best chance of getting into Europe next season. Is it through the Europa League and winning that Conference League and getting into the competition? Or do you make a run at finishing probably fifth in the Premier League and getting into the Europa League, potentially the Champions League that way? But to be honest with you, mate, I kind of look at these injuries and I still believe that I don't think missing out on the Champions League would be that bad a thing for Aston Villa right now.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, mate. It is a difficult one. It's going to be interesting to see how the boys and Unai just react to this, mate, because it's safe to say we're sort of navigating some tricky waters at the moment. And I think, you know, there's the potential to learn a lot about the squad. I think, you know, we've kind of said there's been maybe a tinge of overachieving. I think we'll really sort of see that. We'll see where we stand with a few players as well. And, you know, I'm hoping, you know, the likes of Musa can play himself back into form. And, you know, we'll see the best of JJ soon as well. I'm absolutely sure of that. But, guys, let us know your thoughts in the comment section down below. As I say, we've got Fulham away next, so we'll probably be back within the next day or two to preview that one. If you're listening on Apple and Spotify, make sure you follow, download, all that. It helps us out more than you guys could imagine. TikTok and Instagram, they are in the link tree in the description. Make sure you're checking out the socials. And yeah, up the Villa.